Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel on YouTube. Let's get straight to the docket. First, a follow-up on that guy named Chris regarding a lot of comments over the past week. Second, a 2004 child abduction case finally coming to an end. Third, a missing mom has been found in Florida, and it doesn't look like foul play. Fourth, R. Kelly is still trying to get out on a bond. Fifth, no, you can't live in the rafters. Sixth, two good guy cop stories. Seventh, former TV actor arrested. Eight, you can't threaten judges. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day and our winner from last week. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich, and thanks for watching Crime Talk. Now, I hope you all had a great weekend. If you haven't done so already, I'd ask if you hit that subscribe button, hit the little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. And we will go live tomorrow at 6 p.m. Mountain Time on both YouTube and Facebook. And as always, leave us a comment. Now, first on the docket, a follow-up on that guy named Chris. Now, there's been a lot of new interest in that guy named Chris. Why, you say? Well, the reason is because the Netflix series American Murder, The Family Next Door has been on Netflix, and it is now one of the more popular movies, documentaries that is appearing on Netflix. And obviously, people are disturbed by this particular story, and they're doing research on it, and a lot of them are coming here. Now, obviously some people had to wait for Netflix to get this information. All they had to do was go to our playlist, and you could have seen all of the information because there was a lot of information that was left out, particularly as it related to Nicole Kessinger, as we have all those videos in our play section. We also brought you the information last week, and we'll try to be there in court on Thursday when Miss Nicole Kessinger tries to obtain a name change as well. Now, the questions that I have been receiving in the comments section, and not just a few, but a lot of questions, is do you think that Chris Watts actually has a chance of getting a new trial? I have said no, no chance in that whatsoever. Let me now explain why that's not going to happen. Now, Chris Watts, and I know I probably shouldn't say his last name because the YouTube censors go off, and I'm not sure why we have to deal with that, but it's a reality because a lot of people don't want that name used and certainly don't think that anyone should have a video monetized if they use that name. But we're going to use it and see what happens. So Chris Watts pled guilty for the death of his wife, Shanann, and his two little girls and unborn child. First-degree murder carries a life sentence without the possibility of parole. And before the court sentences anyone regarding those separate cases whereupon Chris Watts received his lengthy multiple life sentences in this particular case, the court first engaged in a colloquy, and they do this on the record. It's called a Rule 11 advisement. The judge goes through and explains in almost painstaking detail. It almost sounds like the judge is trying to talk somebody out of pleading guilty. Why do judges do that? They do that to make sure that this is what the defendant wants to do. That's why all this is done on the record, why it's recorded at a minimum, or there's a stenographer taking something down. The court will not take someone's guilty plea if the court has any doubt to think that this is not a knowing, voluntary plea on behalf of the defendant. He can't be forced, he can't be threatened, he can't have some sort of side agreement off to the side. So the court went through that with Chris Watts. The court would not have accepted the plea if the court was not satisfied. And one of the questions is that the defendant is asked, are you satisfied with your attorney's advice and representation? And that's really kind of a speak now or forever hold your peace moment. Why? Because there's post-conviction relief matters that we'll talk about in just a second that come in. And in this particular case, Chris Watts said he liked his attorneys. They've been great. They've talked to him about everything. All right, that's it. Chris Watts comes back. They have sentencing. He goes to prison for the rest of his life. Never going to get out. Now, there are time restrictions on 35C. 35C is the criminal rule of procedure in most jurisdictions as it relates to post-conviction relief. Post-conviction relief is when somebody says, my conviction was obtained unconstitutionally. Those are very difficult to prove, particularly when there is, in fact, a guilty plea. All right? With a guilty plea, you admit as a matter of law and as a matter of fact, you did what you pled guilty to. All right? Think about it. If you go in for a simple speeding ticket, and instead of a speeding ticket, you get a defective headlamp. What is always going to be on your driving record? It's going to be defective headlamp. You made it up for plea negotiation purposes, but it's always there. And from there on out, you'll always have those points and it'll be reflected for you. As a matter of law and as a matter of fact, that's what took place. It doesn't really matter. Here, Chris Watts pled guilty to the death of Shanann, his two little girls, as well as his unborn child. After deliberation charges, those have an unlimited amount of time. There's no time limit in which to file a 35C. On the charges, for example, relating to the death of the unborn child, Nico, there's a three-year time bar. So after 3 years from the date that you're sentenced, you have 3 years in which to file a post-conviction relief motion. Now, here's the thing. You only get one bite at this apple. Because if you file your motion and it's denied, your only remedy then is to appeal to the district court and say, hey, this is what the district court received from me saying why I received ineffective assistance of counsel. Please appoint me an attorney. Trial court looks at it, denies it. At that point, they can only appeal to the Court of Appeals. Court of Appeals will look at it and say, yeah, not sufficient basis, or reverse and remand and tell the court to give him an attorney if he doesn't already have an attorney. But what do you have to show? You have to show that the standard of care for that attorney, their ability to represent, fell below the standard of a reasonable attorney basically in the same situation. No one's going to say that these attorneys' standard of care fell below that of a reasonable attorney. And I can guarantee you, mark my words, they have documented with painstaking detail that they went and spoke with Chris Watts and said, here's the offer, what do you want to do? Hey, plead guilty, let's just get this over with. Anytime you're having a client go to prison for the rest of their life, you're going to document and make sure that they understand everything, and you're going to go over everything. And you're going to weigh the options, saying, hey, you got the death penalty, but no one's got it in Colorado in a long time. And right now, it's not even there. So why would you plead guilty unless it's the client's decision? Understand, it's always the client's decision. No attorney can tell someone to go plead guilty. In fact, one of the questions that the court asks in the colloquy is anyone forcing you to do this? Are you doing this of your own free will? Chris Watts said, yes. He, in fact, is doing this of his own free will. The next step would be you would have to show that the standard of care from their attorneys fell below a certain level standard. And then you'd have to show that something has changed, that something was done or not done that would have resulted in a substantial likelihood of a different verdict. And I say the verdict because most 35Cs are done after trial. They're done after trial because most people go to trial, they proclaim their innocence, they do the appeal process, and then the 35C process begins 3 years from the date of the final conviction on the appellate process. Well, Chris Watts didn't appeal anything because there was nothing to appeal at that time. Now, there's been talk, and we have a recording of Chris Watts apparently saying that he was somehow taken advantage of during his interrogation. Well, guess what? He wasn't taken advantage of. He went to the police station on his own. His father was there with him. He knew that he was not under arrest. He could have left at any time, and he voluntarily engaged with and agreed to talk to the detectives as well as engage in a polygraph examination. We have all those videos. You can see for yourself. What Chris Watts would try to argue would simply be the fact that he was somehow manipulated into talking, which he otherwise wouldn't want to have done. Reality of it is he failed the polygraph test, and then they said, why don't you tell us what's going on? And he crumbled. And in fact, on top of that, we know that he then lied about stating that Shanann had done something to the children, and it was some sort of revenge killing on that part. We know that from his interviews where the police and FBI agents, CBI agents, go up to his prison and talk to him, and he basically says, I never would have thought of that but for the agent telling me that as a possibility. Now, the agent's going to say that that was simply something that was done to get him to talk. And guess what? It did. And ultimately, he confessed. So, to wrap things up once and for all, is Chris Watts going to file a motion for post-conviction relief? Probably. What else does he have to do? What does he have to lose? Do I believe that it will be denied? Absolutely. Will he then attempt to appeal that denial of the post-conviction relief? Yes, he will. And I think that it will be denied. There's nothing in the record thus far other than him saying, now, basically, I have some buyer's remorse. And geez, I've been here, you know, a couple years now, and this is really just not that much fun. And, you know, even getting a divorce and paying a lot in maintenance and child support would have been a lot better than what I'm facing right now. The reality of it is he is staying in prison. He's not going anywhere. I hope that answers anyone's fears that he could possibly get a new trial. Simply not going to happen. Next on the docket, let's talk about a case going back to 2004. And it's regarding another case where there was a kidnapping and then the child taken from the pregnant mother. Well, a Kansas woman convicted of killing an expectant mother after cutting the woman's fetus from her womb to claim it as her own has been scheduled to die by lethal injection. The murder, according to prosecutors, unfolded after Lisa Montgomery proposed to drive to Bobby Joe Stinnett's home in Missouri to pick up a puppy in 2004. In reality, Montgomery had planned the attack on the Missouri woman with the intent to cut out Stinnett's 8-month-old fetus with a knife and return to Kansas with the child. In 2007, Montgomery was convicted by a jury in the United States District Court for the Western District of Missouri of federal kidnapping resulting in death, and the jurors unanimously recommended a death sentence. On Friday, the judge agreed with that recommendation, and on Friday, Montgomery, scheduled by the U.S. Justice Department to be the first female to be put to death by the United States government in more than 6 decades. Her lethal injection is scheduled for December 8th at the United States Penitentiary in Terre Haute, Indiana. The evidence presented at trial was that Montgomery attacked and strangled Stinnett in her home. The evidence also presented at trial was that there was a struggle whereupon Montgomery ultimately strangled Stinnett to death. Montgomery removed the baby from Stinnett's body, took it back to Kansas, and attempted to pass it off on her own. Ultimately, Montgomery confessed to murdering Stinnett and to abducting the child. The cases were upheld on appeal. All the post-conviction relief has been done. And now, unless there is some sort of last-minute stay from a federal court or the United States Supreme Court, Miss Montgomery will no longer be with us after December 8th. Well, a quick follow-up on a case that we talked about last week. Searchers were looking for a Florida woman who disappeared last month, and they may have found her SUV driven by Stephanie Hollingsworth. Well, they found her SUV submerged in a retention pond near her home. Police say there's a body inside the vehicle, but they have not been able to confirm the identity of the remains. Apparently, drone pilots helping in the search spotted the submerged vehicle from their drone footage. Detectives have also said that the license plate on the vehicle matches that of Hollingsworth's SUV. Hollingsworth left her home about 2 p.m. on September 25th to run some errands. She withdrew $20 of cash from a nearby bank and was seen in surveillance footage walking down a Walmart aisle later that day. Scott Hollingsworth, Stephanie's husband, said it was completely out of character for his wife, who's a yoga instructor and mother of three sons, to simply just get up and vanish. Security footage at the bank and at Walmart didn't show anything unusual, and Hollingworth didn't appear to be troubled or distressed in any way. Police had stated that Scott Hollingworth and his immediate family members were not and have never been considered suspects in the disappearance. Now, this case may sound a little unusual, but had some relationship to a case where there was a woman who literally disappeared just like this. No one could ultimately find her. She apparently had slid off the road into a retention pond, or a small pond near a roadway, that some recent snowfall had covered up the tracks. And ultimately, later in the spring, the car was discovered. Didn't look like foul play. It looked like simply an accident where somebody went into the retention pond. That may be a very similar type of situation that is here. No foul play, just a horrible, horrible accident. And our best wishes go out to their family. Next on the docket, R. Kelly still trying to get out of custody. Now, as you all may recall, R. Kelly, former music singer, has had a troubled history when it comes to criminal cases and lawsuits regarding underage girls. He has both cases in Chicago as well as New York, and he's being held as an inmate, obviously pending trial. He was assaulted a few months ago, and we've talked about these assaults and the individual that has assaulted them and has assaulted R. Kelly. Now, R. Kelly has tried to argue just about every way he possibly can to get out on bond. As you may recall, first it was, I'm so broke, where could I possibly go? I'm so famous, where could I possibly go? Please let me out, there's COVID and I could be potentially high risk. Then it was, I was assaulted while in custody, please let me out. Needless to say, the court is not buying this in any way, and Mr. Kelly remains in custody, where I anticipate he will be remaining until his trial takes place. Now, just for the record, his legal team has argued 6 times to have him released from custody. Now, normally when you're in federal custody, you get 1 shot at bond, and that's at the detention hearing. That's it. You have to be able to show some sort of significant change circumstance other than the passage of time. And R. Kelly, although he's come up with any good reason he possibly can, they've been rejected by the court. Next on the docket, let's take a quick recess. Please go to crimetalksearch.com and sign up for a background subscription service. You will be absolutely pleased that you did. When you do this, you will have the ability to anonymously search as many people as you desire. Think about it. People you come in contact with, maybe people you want to date, people you want to go into business with, all types of people that you should search and do a background check so that you know with whom you are dealing at any given time. The background search is conducted easily on your computer, and literally while you wait, millions of public records are searched. A report is generated. While you wait, you can print it, you can download it, and it will include information regarding emails associated with the person you're searching, phone numbers, social media, criminal history, including sex offender registration, property records, marital records, judgments, and bankruptcies. All types of information you want to know about everyone. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. All right, next case on the docket. A man who apparently has been living in the rafters of a supermarket in Nevada has been arrested after employees noticed he had fallen through the ceiling. A 35-year-old man was arrested and charged with burglary and obstructing a police officer after night shift employees at the grocery store found him while the store was closed. The day we apprehended this person, the reason they noticed him was because when he made it through the roof of the building and into the ceiling area of the grocery store, his foot went through the ceiling, according to police. He took a bad step and one of his feet went through the ceiling, exposing his foot to where people could see it, and that was what alerted employees. Investigators discovered that the suspect had been using an exterior ladder outside of the building to climb up onto the roof and then down into the rafters of the store for at least a week before being found. And of course, while you're in the grocery store, why not take advantage of what was there? He is believed to have been stealing items from the deli at the store and basically making a makeshift living area for himself. When the deputies were on scene, they tried to negotiate with the guy to come down out of the ceiling, and he was refusing. The police then sent in the canine, and the canine went in there and unfortunately fell into some sort of shaft area and got stuck. Fortunately, the man ultimately surrendered, and the canine was recovered without injury as well. We've had a lot of stories of people living in places they shouldn't be living in without permission. Just remember, if you go into the business or a home with the intent to commit a crime therein and you have no permission being in there, guess what? It is a felony. It's called burglary, ladies and gentlemen. Next on the docket, two good guy cop stories. First, the Atlantic City police officers this week pulled a distraught man from a casino parking garage ledge Wednesday night. And guess what? It was caught on body cam videos. Atlantic City police were tipped off that there was a man threatening to jump off a bridge. While they looked for him, they received a photo he'd sent to a family member showing him on a parking deck at a casino. The member of the crisis negotiation team for the Atlantic City Police Department showed up, found a man sitting on a ledge. The police officer spoke with the man for about 10 minutes until he became extremely agitated and stood up, heading towards the edge while simultaneously yelling. The officer took off toward him, concerned he was about to jump. He grabbed the man's leg while the other officers raced over and brought them both away from the ledge. So these officers that assisted this man, they're some of the good guys. They're the ones that show up every day and help people like the oath that they took to serve and protect. Our hats off to them. Next is a deputy in Tampa. A deputy was finalizing a traffic stop the other day in Tampa when he noticed another vehicle pulled up with the horn honking. The driver got out of the car and waved his hands in the air. The deputy realized that the man was choking and ran over to help. Within seconds, the man's airway was cleared. The driver told the deputy he was eating a sandwich when he started choking on a piece of it. As you can see from the video, the officer jumps right into action and helps save this man's life. Gonna have to remember this. I've been known to eat an occasional sandwich in the car. Probably be a good idea to take small bites. Next on the docket, a former TV actor. Do you remember Zachary Ty Bryan? That's right. He used to be the oldest son in the show Home Improvement. Well, now he's 39 years old, and he was involved in a domestic violence dispute in Oregon over the weekend. Police responded from a call of a third party that heard the confrontation going on. Mr. Bryan was ultimately arrested for charges that included strangulation. The victim allegedly turned down medical help. Mr. Bryan was booked into the Lane County Jail early Saturday morning. It's unclear when his next court date will be, but more than likely it was earlier this morning where a bond would have been set. Obviously, the condition of his bond is no contact with the victim. Otherwise, that could be tampering with a witness. More serious charges, including protection order violations. If the strangulation's involved, that's more than likely going to be a felony. We'll continue to follow this case. Next on the docket, how many times have I said it, but I'll say it again. You can't go around threatening people, all right? A man has been charged with threatening a federal judge in New Jersey. William Katz, 56, was accused Sunday of sending multiple threatening letters, emails, and voice messages to this unnamed judge beginning last month. He apparently was calling the jurist a traitor and threatening to make his home address public. The emails apparently said, "I will try my best not to harm the traitor judge, but like I said, judge is a traitor and needs to be deleted." Katz allegedly wrote in an email to the judge on Sunday, "The case must be open and move forward now. This needs to be done now." Well, apparently Mr. Katz is a pro se defendant for a case before this particular judge, and he is upset as to why the case has not been resolved and orders have not been entered. Now, knowing someone's address, even a judge, is that in itself a threat? Possibly. As you may recall, there was a case in New Jersey just a few months ago where an attorney went to the home of a federal judge, killing her son and injuring her husband. So making threats of that nature could be deemed a true threat. I've had a lot of cases dealing with true threat cases, particularly in federal court. It is a very fine line, but it goes back to just simple common decency. You don't threaten judges, you don't threaten other people, and you particularly aren't going to get a whole lot of sway against a judge by saying, oh, I'll let the public know your home address. Most of that information is already public knowledge, and you're only going to upset the judge, and guess what? Possibly get charges. Why can't people just use common sense and decency? And what Mr. Katz should remember is, guess what? The judge hadn't ruled against him, which means nothing bad had happened for a while and was not going to happen bad for a while. So just keep it up. But he had to have his way, just couldn't do it, couldn't help himself. And now guess what? He's definitely, if convicted, will more than likely go to prison. We'll give him the presumption of innocence. Not good advice. Don't threaten judges. Don't threaten anyone. Just makes life a hell of a lot easier, ladies and gentlemen. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day, but let's announce the winner from last week. Once again, always tough competition. You just think people can't be that dumb, but it turns out they are. And the dumb criminal contestant of the week goes to George Pikas. That's right, the man outside of the apartment complex in a gorilla suit, wielding a machete and setting off fireworks. Congratulations, Mr. Pikas. You are a dumb criminal contestant of the week winner, which means you are going to be receiving a Crime Talk mug. Now, as always, if you don't want to become a dumb criminal contestant, you just want the mug, hit the link below to Teespring. All kinds of new stuff in there. I think you'll like it, and I think you'll really like the mug. I do. Use it every day. Now for our dumb criminal contestant of the week. Two men that, even though it's Monday, are already running hard when it comes to the dumb criminal contestant winner. Please meet Robert Hobby and Marcus Reeves. These two rocket science geniuses went on a burglary spree, breaking into stores, stealing cigarettes, and lottery tickets. But the two men left a few things behind during their crime spree, like their shoe and tools. And guess what? Mr. Reeves, he left behind his wallet and his driver's license. That's right. Needless to say, when the deputies went to the home of Mr. Reeves, he did in fact confess and now is facing a total of 14 charges for theft and burglary. So, Mr. Hobby, Mr. Reeves, you are a dumb criminal contestant of the day. Now, we've talked about, not that we're condoning people committing crime, but if you are going to do it, don't take your cell phone. I guess we're going to have to add to that checklist, leave your wallet and driver's license at home. I may have mentioned this case years ago, but I had a client that was accused of exposing himself to children. And incidents occurred all over the city, and miraculously, all of the incidents stopped when my client was arrested. How, in fact, did they find my client? That's right. When he was dropping his trousers at the park, he dropped his wallet that had his license in there as well. So I guess add that to the checklist, but doesn't do much good for Mr. Hobby and Mr. Reeves because they've already been caught, and they are a dumb criminal contestant of the day. Thanks for watching. I know we went a little long today, but I just wanted to talk about that guy named Chris one more time so everybody can rest assured he's not going anywhere. Leave me a comment below about what we've discussed. Always interested in what people have to say about these cases. And don't forget, tomorrow we go live 6 p.m. Mountain Time on both YouTube as well as Facebook. Have a great day, and we'll see you tomorrow on Crime Talk.